This episode of Before the Train Wreck podcast is brought to you by the Grondike Soap Company. Guys, I use Tactical Soap and God of War Beard Oil every single day. Tactical Soap is a handmade natural product made in the United States of America from ingredients you can actually pronounce, not endocrine disrupting chemicals that are going to lower your testosterone. Both the soap and beard oil is infused with bioidentical pheromones that are designed by a clinical psychologist and pheromone expert to maximize attractiveness to the opposite sex. Go visit coopersoap.com and that will automatically apply 10% off your order. Consider grabbing one of the trifecta packs to save even more. If you are a bearded man and want a majestic beard like yours truly, the God of War Beard Oil is hands down the best beard oil product I've ever used. Gentlemen, this is the most manly handmade soap that we know of. Other soaps are going to get you clean. This one will get you dirty. Again, you're going to want to visit coopersoap.com now and place your order. That's Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R, soap.com now. All right, guys, welcome back. We're live for episode 91 of the Before the Train Wreck series. I am joined tonight by a very special guest who, I guess, went through hell and back and again and came back again a few times. But he got introduced to me through my old business coach and shot me an email with some information about a book that he wrote on his own divorce, which was basically the equivalent of divorcing the devil, if I can distill it that way. Welcome, JD McCabe. How are you?
Great, Rich. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I appreciate you carving out some time. This is something that not a lot of people get to hear about. And I think it's worth paying attention to because a lot of guys just march into a slaughterhouse. They see some red flags, or maybe their intuition picks up on a few red flags, but they don't always respond to them. So this will offer you guys some insight on what can happen if you do not choose wisely. as my old friend Sean Smith used to say, you know, if you invite the wrong woman into your life, she can make a train wreck out of it. That's for sure. So we're going to have some lessons here for you within the story. Do me a big favor, though. I got a 7-day ban on Facebook the other day, so I can't stream any of this to any of my Facebook properties. This is what happens when you have some witty banter amongst friends on a private Facebook page. Their algorithm picks up on it, and this is where I'm at. So smash the like button, and if there's somewhere on Facebook you want to share this because it's not currently casting there, grab the link and drop it over there. It would help me out a ton. JD, where do we begin? I think we should start with the video that you sent me by email last week. So this is probably the best way to introduce his story. This will be like the 30,000 foot, I guess, review on what happened. So let's just cue this up and you can turn up your speakers and have a listen to this.
My damn.
Here we go.
Richard, good morning. This is JD, Danny McCabe. First and foremost, thank you, sir, for even considering my story. The Third Gift, My Dance with the Devil and Her Mother. It is a book that I was highly encouraged to write by professionals, by family and friends, because of the nightmare situation that I went through as my marriage collapsed, my 23-year marriage. So the book really, I hope, highlights an opportunity for your listeners, your audience, to see an example of an individual who has not only reestablished his identity as a man and as a father, but who's also looking to take the traumatic experience and make myself even better. I've created a little business around it, and I'm hoping to do what I can to give back to others through sale of the proceeds of the book. Long story short, the first two gifts are my kids. The third gift is a revelation that my now ex-wife made between our attorneys that helped me to uncover and unlock several boxes of deception that occurred in our marriage. So everything that she accused me of doing, which began to unravel me as a man, hollowed me out emotionally, pushed me to the brink. Turns out everything she accused me of doing, she actually was doing. Everything from infidelity to drug addiction. She alienated me from my daughter. Prior to us separating, I spent 9 days in psychiatric lockup. I was emotionally hollowed out by her mom and her. And the biggest mistake that I made is I kept myself on an island, and I have a very large network, and I told nobody about it, and it damn near cost me my life. So prior to us even separating, I spent 9 days in a psychiatric facility, which I would later discover that she played a hand in having me involuntarily committed. And then once we separated and she revealed the third gift to me, which was a, I don't mind telling you, it was an STD, it was herpes. It opened my eyes, as I said previously, to everything that she had been accusing me of doing, she actually was doing. So I discovered 5 years of addiction to amphetamines. 2 of those years, she used our kids to fill prescriptions in their names to the tune of 600 days. And I also uncovered that she had a long history of STDs that were treated by antibiotics. So at the very high level, I'm hoping for the story to not only be an example to others, men and women, that there is an opportunity to grow through adversity. There's an opportunity to not take the victim mindset, but rather the survivor mentality. And in addition to that, I'm hoping to provide them with a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of hope, and a little bit of inspiration. So in addition to 9 days in a psychiatric facility and uncovering all of the deception that my now ex-wife hid from me, I would discover that she was also poisoning me with arsenic. So I'm not only a survivor of being married to a closet narcissist, somebody with borderline personality disorder, that she unleashed her demons on me 17 years into the marriage, which I believe is related back to daddy issues she had in her childhood, which I lay out in the book. So in the book, I walk people through this entire journey, and hopefully show them resilience, strength, and the ability to come out the other side. So arsenic survivor, 9 days in psychiatric lockup, survived the broken healthcare system, the broken mental healthcare system, and also a long journey through the very biased family law court system. I've become somewhat familiar with your platform, and I really like what you're doing. And if you have any further questions regarding my story, I'd be happy to chat with you. That is it in a synopsis. It's an unbelievable journey of rediscovering myself, but not only rediscovering myself, but making myself better in the process. And also having to reestablish a relationship with my daughter, because it alienated me from my daughter for 2 years as well. So thank you, sir, again, for considering my request.
Okay, so I'll pull that out of the screen. I think that kind of sets the tone for what all happened to you and what you're up against. Let me just got to minimize a few screens here to make some room. So made a few notes here. Infidelity, drug addiction, you got locked up in psychiatric ward, her mom plotted against you, got an STD, she tried to poison you, and parental alienation. You've pretty much ticked off every box for crazy that could possibly happen to a dude when he's untying the knot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much that was left off the table there that didn't get pulled when you were going. Now, first question I got for you, and you know, thank you for coming on and doing this. And I want to grab the link to your book, and I'm going to keep spamming it in the chat as we're doing the show, because I think you guys should read it. I'm going to grab a copy too, but it's on Amazon. It's called Third Gift, Dance with the Devil. And you can just either click that or you can search it if you guys are watching it afterwards. But what do we start with, man? Like, let's kind of go into the before the knot was tied, like when you guys were dating, when you were engaged, you know, before the kids came along. I'm assuming the kids came, you know, during the marriage, not before.
Yeah, that's correct. And they, and again, thank you, sir, for this opportunity, but they, in your book, which I'm almost through your book, and I love your book. So, I wish I had it 26 years ago, but I didn't. So,
did you see any of the red flags as you were kind of entering into the marriage? Like, were there warning signs?
Yeah, there were. And so obviously one of the ones that you highlighted first in your red flag section was, maybe it was first, maybe it wasn't, but the daddy issue piece.
Daddy issues is the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I met her, I wasn't looking, we just started casually dating. She had happened to be also casually dating, you know, two other gentlemen at the time. And I think the biggest red flag that I missed was the fact that she had been previously married. So she had married a gentleman. She allegedly, never moved in with him, was married for 8 weeks. He was controlling. He was abusive. She was looking for a father figure. He was 11 years her senior, had an 11-year-old daughter that he was going to bring into the union. And of course, when I discussed that with her, for me, I went towards sympathy that she had been in an abusive relationship, told me some stories about their bachelorette party, her bachelorette party that he had showed up at, and the cops were called to drag him out of there because he was getting aggressive with her. And again, this is all alleged. So that was the first major red flag that I had missed, was the fact also that she was estranged from her father at the time.
How old was she?
She was 22 when she was married.
And how old were you when you met her?
I met her. I was 26 when I met her. Okay, yeah. So when I met her, she would have been 22. But I think everything became real clear after the marriage ended, and I had all sorts of clarity around who she actually was. But that's the first thing that I scratched my head was, I'm writing the book, I'm like, wait a minute. She was dating two other guys in addition to me while coming out of an alleged abusive relationship. So that didn't make any sense to me.
The dating, you know, several men simultaneously is pretty common with women when they're kind of weighing out their options. You know, we call it spinning plates on the guy side of the table. Women are just natural plate spinners. Like, because they're hypergamous, they always want to evaluate what they think is the best possible match for them. So that's why she was doing that. So I don't think that's much of a red flag. I think it's common for women to do that. But talk a bit about the daddy issues. Like, did she not have any kind of relationship with her father? Was he not around when she was growing up? Was he a piece of furniture? Like, what was the deal there?
Well, she made him out to be a piece of furniture. And again, I would later, we'd later reconnect with him, and I can tell you a little bit about that. But he came, so she, when she was two, she's got a brother. Her brother's 4 years older than her, but her father left the marriage when she was two. He came out of the closet when she was two, and he moved away. And she would obviously describe him as a deadbeat dad, didn't provide any support, so forth, so on. But the funny thing is she had a good relationship with her father up until her first marriage collapsed. So she did tell me, as I did dig into it a little bit, that her now openly gay father, you know, the marriage was over. She was 2 years old. He took in her ex-husband. Now she took in her ex-husband. I said, why would your father do that to you? And her story back to me was, well, he's gay and he was attracted to him. So
hold on a sec. So her dad took in her ex-husband when they got divorced to what, live with him or?
Yeah, he lived with him.
Were they friends, or was he trying to convert him to the other team or something? Or what was he doing there?
No, he had a lifelong partner. He moved in with him in Florida. Her father had moved away to Tampa, Florida, and he moved in with him in Florida. And believe it or not, after her third gift revelation to me, I started cross-checking everything. And I looked up property records down in Florida, Hillsborough County, and I discovered indeed, he was on the title for the home that he had lived with. He lived with her father and his father's partner and some woman who I never heard a thing about. So that piece was true, but again, she had a great relationship with her father up until her marriage collapsed. So
what other red flags popped up that you know, that you saw in the chapter when you were going through my book? And guys, by the way, if you haven't got the book, that's cool. You don't need it to see the red flag chapter. I'm just going to put it, there we go. It's on a ticker on the bottom. So if you just go to entrepreneursandcars.com/red-flag, you can download that chapter for free. Did you see any other red flags before you guys said, I do forever and ever till death do us part and all that stuff? Or was it just the daddy issues?
I think it was the daddy issues and the fact that she, you know, initially, when I met her, I met her while playing in a slow pitch softball league, and I didn't think twice about her for 3 months, you know, because it did concern me a little bit. You know, call it judgmental, call it what you will, at the age of 26. But I decided, she'd been married before. I don't want to go down that path. And I bumped into her in a bar, and then we reconnected, and things moved forward from there. So we had dated for about a year and a half. And then got engaged and then married. And then, you know, the first gift, my son Billy, arrived, you know, about a year after we had been married. So you quickly settle into, you know, raising a child and then raising another child. And
let me ask you this question. When you guys were dating for the year and a half before you get married, How did she respond to stress in the relationship? Like, did you guys ever fight over anything or?
No, we didn't. And that's the thing that, completely caught me off guard. You know, we were happily married for 17 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So talk about the untying of the knot. So, I mean, we've got cheating, drugs, lockup for you, your mom meddling in all this, an STD, her trying to poison you, and the alienation part.
Right, right. So all of that started occurring in the spring of 2014. So at that point, we were 21 years into our marriage. Mm-hmm. We were officially divorced in 2016. We continued on in the legal system for another 2 years until 2018. But yeah, the first 17 years, I would describe as reasonably stable. My daughter would, you know, when things started to fall apart, my daughter was 15 and I found her crying in a closet and she's like, you know, Dad, what happened? You and mom are like teenagers in love. Mm-hmm. So again, maybe I was blinded to it. Maybe I was living the beta illusion as you talk about in your book. But yeah, things were good. But then it was in 2010, that the subtle accusations began on her part. And those subtle accusations really centered around and started with infidelity. That
why did she start accusing you of cheating?
Just out of the blue, because I think she was doing it. As I look back now, I'm thinking because she was doing it.
Yeah, that's usually not usually, but that's often what will show up is, you know, they always say that when you point at somebody, you've got three fingers pointing back at yourself.
Yeah.
Whenever you know somebody starts to accuse you of infidelity when you're not doing anything, you can almost guarantee that they're up to something.
Yeah. And I think what led to, so I can talk more about it, but I think that was very subtle. She wouldn't do it all that often. It'd be, you know, every 3-4 months, you know, she was seeing a therapist. She started seeing a therapist because her father, she had to make the unfortunate decision in 2007 to take her father off of life support. He was young. He was 62. He had a massive heart attack and was brain dead. So in Florida at the time, they didn't recognize the whole, you know, gay marriage or, you know, common law or whatever you want to call it. And so her lifelong partner was not in a position to make that decision. Mm-hmm. So she had to make that decision. And a few years later, his lifelong partner also passed away. So I think those two tragic events, I think the guilt of the estrangement from her father for whatever happened in her first marriage was the tipping point. And I would later discover it was in 2010 that she started the abusing the medications. So I didn't know it at the time, but I would later discover that. So fast forward, you know, I'm dealing with subtle accusations of infidelity that her therapist thinks that I'm cheating on her. And she started building the wall that we never had trust in the marriage and I could never trust you from day one. And, you know, a couple of what I view now as insignificant lies she resurrected. I used to hide cigarettes from her and the kids. And there was a business trip in 2001 that she resurrected 13 years later that I drank too much. And I lied to her and I told her I had food poisoning. I, you know, instead of telling her, hey, I was out till 4 a.m. and drank too much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she started pulling on those that you have always been a liar. And then in the spring of 2014, just the wheels absolutely came off. So she would later pivot from infidelity to drug addiction. And it was also in 2014 that I started to work out, a little inspiration from my son. I used to be fairly hefty. I used to be 240, 245. Mm-hmm. So I started working out in the spring of 2014, switched from Coke to Diet Coke. I wasn't doing anything intensive. I wasn't running. I was lifting weights 3 days a week. But I started losing 35 pounds in less than 6 weeks. Then it was 40. Then it was 45. And I'm like, wow, this working out and switching to Diet Coke really works. Well, then I started to have some symptoms of tingling in my fingers, tingling in my toes, pain in my neck, intestinal issues, and the weight just kept melting off. And there was no increased stress yet in the marriage. So I can't attribute it to anxiety from stress on the home front. But I would ultimately discover that that's when she was putting arsenic in my protein powder. It would take me a couple of years to figure that out, but the symptoms and the weight loss with some blood work got so bad that I had elevated white blood cell counts. I had liver enzymes that were significantly off. I had another enzyme called creatine phosphokinase that is, you know, normally elevated with a heart attack. a stroke or a brain injury or crushing muscle injury that was significantly elevated. And they took them a few years to figure out actually what was happening. But I was evaluated for early onset of ALS, Parkinson's, leukemia. And so I'm going through all sorts of health issues. And it was at that same time that her mother got involved in the game.
What was she trying to do with you? I mean, she was trying to kill you?
Yeah, I believe she was trying to kill me. And people say, why is she not in jail? Well, by the time I discovered this, I'd been bounced out of the house and we had been separated for a year. And so I no longer had access to the protein powder, but she would religiously pull that protein powder out of the cupboard when I was still in the home and accuse me of putting something in there. She'd pull it out and she'd want to read the label to me again. I'm like, it's 100% whey protein. I'm not going through this again. It's like, you're putting something in your protein powder.
She was accusing you of what, putting something in it to lose the weight and gain the muscle, you know, beyond like the protein?
Drugs or whatever, because that's when the accusations of drugs started to begin, because I was getting thin and that only fueled her infidelity piece and also with her mother, because it's like, you're working out, you've lost 45 pounds now.
We got a couple of comments here from some of my regular viewers. Like, we got a guy here saying, you know, her SMV was lowering, meaning her sexual marketplace value was lower than yours. Yeah. She was thinking yours was higher and you were going to move on. Like, did she fall apart during the marriage? Did she put on weight? No,
she didn't. Actually, and you know, certainly what I would later discover that, you know, she was not only abusing Adderall and Adderall XR, but also Ritalin LA, which is a long acting form of another amphetamine. So her weight was never an issue. She had a lot of, and I think your listener's comment is pretty accurate. She had a lot of health issues. I mean, and those dated back to 2001. So in addition to borderline personality disorder and narcissistic.
Was she ever officially diagnosed by anybody for narcissism or borderline?
No, because anybody that she went to, she was able to fool them. Nobody ever believed it was her. They always believed that it was me, that she was in a controlling and an abusive marriage and he's got anger issues. And of course, oh, by the way, I was the one that spent 9 days in a psychiatric facility. I was the one that was misdiagnosed with bipolar 2. And that occurred in the fall of 2014 after staying on an island, keeping it all to myself, and enduring 6 months of harassment from her mother and from her, and accusations of infidelity and drug addiction and lack of trust in our marriage. And like I said in my video clip to you, they just hollowed me out. I mean,
it's exhausting. I completely understand. Was she a stay-at-home mom? Did she work?
She was a stay-at-home mom. Yeah. And of course, as you know how that plays out. Well, maybe you don't. I don't know what you
said. Was there a sequence of guys that were kind of lined up over the years, or was it just one guy that she was cheating on with you?
We never figured it out.
You never got to the bottom of it, eh?
No, because she, as we move forward to our alimony trial and we had phones imaged and computers imaged and my daughter's iPad, my daughter's phone imaged and all my stuff imaged, she restored her phone to factory settings. Okay. So she wiped her phone and she also wiped all the computers that she had in her possession. So the only thing that she turned over to me was 14 emails, 14.
Textbook gaslighting is what Zed.
Absolutely. I'm laughing about that now because I also went through a domestic violence trial. After I was out of the house, she filed domestic violence charges against me. And we resided in North Carolina at the time. And North Carolina is a non-pleading state. So you can say whatever you want and you'll get your day in court. Well, she claimed that she was afraid of me and my daughter was afraid of me and I was going to kill her. And so we ended up in a domestic violence court. And my smile was because my domestic violence attorney covered the mic when she was on the stand and leaned over to me and he said, she's gaslighting you. And I said, what does that mean? He said, look it up. And sure enough, I got very well educated about gaslighting. So,
she was accusing you of drugs and cheating and you got locked up. So did you commit yourself or did she like somehow influence this process to get you locked up? Like the psychiatric ward thing, I'm confused about that. Can you kind of break that down?
Yeah, absolutely. I was confused about it too.
I bet. What am I doing here?
Yeah, well, how did I end up here? But so again, spring of 2014, she starts in with these accusations. The mom, her mother gets in on the game. We're on a beach trip in June of 2014 with her little family and my, our two kids. And it was on that lovely beach trip that her mother threatened to kill me. So just, I came up to the kitchen just to get a soda, and her mother and her had gone somewhere, and they're standing at the end of the counter. I'll never forget it. And her mother just looks me dead in the eye from the end of the counter and says, if you put your hands on my daughter, I'll kill you.
Why did you bring that up?
Perhaps you're addicted to porn. Perhaps you're addicted to drugs. There's something going on, something maybe that happened in your childhood. You need to figure it out, and you need to dig deep into yourself. So well, it was,
you see the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in that family, huh?
Right, right. So it was what it was. Whatever she was feeding her mother, whatever she was telling her mother, and again, a woman that I unconditionally loved for 23 years, welcomed her into my home, took her on vacations, but she turned on me like a cobra and offered no explanation. When I asked her, once I got over the shock, I said, what have I ever done to your daughter that would lead you to think I was going to kill her and I was going to hurt her? And she had to think about it. She says, well, she told me that one time when you got angry at her, you shook the dishwasher rack and you broke it. I said, I didn't break it. I did shake it. But of course, this is at the height of when she's just badgering me, you know, every other day with some type of crazy, paranoid, delusional accusation. So that occurred in June. In September of that year of 2014, again, I spent the summer just kind of staying on an island, doing my own thing, feeling empty, feeling like a piece of dirt. And, you know, that was at that point that I had all the weight loss going on, and I had all sorts of medical issues that I couldn't figure out what was happening with me. And she, Friday night, September 13th, she called the cops on me. September 14th, I went down to Charlotte, North Carolina to see my son because my daughter had already been alienated from me. I wanted him to know what was going on. I wanted him to hear directly from me. And I didn't want to lose him too. So when I got back from there, she had decided at that point that, yeah, I think it's time for us to separate. And it was the thought of me losing my family. When I went to see the family practitioner that following Monday, she was kind enough to go with me. So the thought of me losing my family and all the instability and all the things that had happened, that he looked at me and said, well, if you lose your family, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I will do without my family. And he interpreted that, that simple little statement, less than 2 minutes, he says to me, I think you have bipolar. And if you don't go to such and such a hospital, I'll have you involuntarily committed. So the same guy a few years later would backtrack. I didn't see him anymore, but he would backtrack and call it, you know, call it anxiety.
How long do they keep you there for?
Well, I went to one facility, went to the place that he said I needed to go to, a dedicated psychiatric facility. And I show up with my little piece of paper. Again, I'm a broken man. I don't know how I was walking. Show up at the window with my little piece of paper that says, I think I might hurt myself. And the nice gentleman behind the window says, it's an 8 to 10 hour wait. Grab a seat. So I'm like, I'm not staying here. So being in the pharmaceutical medical industry, I knew the hospitals in the area. I knew a place that had a psychiatric facility. It was an acute care hospital. Went there and handed them my little piece of paper. And sure enough, I stayed there for 3 days. And then I got a police escort to the place I tried to avoid. They sent me there 3 days later for another 6 day stay. And my civil rights were violated because after I got out, I looked at what the North Carolina law was, and they should have reevaluated me within 24 hours as to whether or not, is this involuntary commitment? Is this necessary? And I didn't see another psychiatric healthcare worker for 72 hours.
This sounds like it went on for years. How are you able to work? Like, you've got a business to run.
Well, it's interesting. So got out of psychiatric facility after 9 days. A couple of my brothers came to town, which is, I'm great. That's when I finally let people into my world, let them know what was going on. And I stayed in the marriage, whether it was right or wrong. I don't regret it now because of the revelation that I received 6 or 7 months later. But I stayed in the marriage and was manipulated out of the house in May of 2015. While I was still in the home, I actually got promoted into the position I have now. So I was able to dial in work-wise. I was able to stay focused. None of the folks that I work with, my boss, none of them knew what was going on personally. They knew there was something going on with my health because at that point I had lost 70 pounds and I just looked like death. And, you know, when the book came out, a lot of them that have read it said, oh, now this makes sense. You know, I didn't want to say anything to you at this particular meeting, but we all thought you were dying of something. Mm. So yeah, ironically, and you know, by the grace of God, I was able to get promoted into this position. So, but I'm in California in December 2015, 4 or 5 months before I left the house, was manipulated out of the house and getting ready for a third interview for this job. And she calls me a half hour beforehand. And once again, says, I think we need to separate. And at this point, I just got to the point of just being laughing in her face. And I'm like, you realize I have a third and final interview a half hour from now. Yeah. She says, no, I'm aware of that, but I just wanted to get that off my chest. And I'm like, okay, you wanted to derail me again. So fortunately, somehow I was promoted into this position and haven't missed a beat, you know, from a work perspective.
It's amazing that you actually accomplished that going through a train wreck of a divorce, because I know that when I was going through it, it was really hard for me to get anything done at the office. That's one of the exhausting things that nobody really talks about. You were alienated from your daughter for how long? Because of the lockup, or was it because of the DV allegation? Or
It started probably in the spring of 2014. I say 2 years, but even though I was in the home with her for a little while, I gave up my parental rights. I didn't want to discipline her. It was my fault. I gave up my parental rights because I'm like, I don't want this to be misinterpreted as another anger outburst.
Right thing, right?
Yeah. I don't want it to be misinterpreted as another anger outburst from dad and this and that, but. So she was 14, 15, very vulnerable, very impressionable, and believed everything mom was telling her. And ultimately, she would see for herself when she lived with mom after I was gone. She would begin to see the effects of mom's drug addiction. And she was, thank God, she was old enough to see that and to recognize, okay, I've got to go. So this
How old were the kids when you guys split?
Katie would have been... Katie would have been 15 and Billy would have been 19. Now, Billy had the luxury of being away to college, so he was somewhat insulated from a lot of it. But, Katie was in the middle of the fire. And so she came back into my life in March of 2016. So, you know, about a month from now, it'll be our 5-year anniversary of, you know, reconnecting.
Have either one of the kids read your book and, like, heard the whole story?
Yeah, they both have read it, and I started writing it in 2017, and they knew that I was writing it. I wanted to make sure I had their support, and one of the things that they both did comment was, you know, my God, you kept so much from us. We had no idea, you know, what you were going through. So I tried to take the high road. She went the other way and was, of course, bad mouthing me at every step that she would take.
Talk about the STD.
Sure. Yeah. So that's the third gift. The first two gifts are my kids, Billy and Katie. And the third gift, I don't want to say the third gift is herpes. There's a lot more to the third gift. It's clarity. It's emotional freedom. It's emotional justice. It's peace of mind. It's the ability for me to go, okay, this is, she was the reason for the demise of the marriage. But we had separated in May of 2015. I finally lawyered up again. In June of 2015, we went to our first mediation in July, and I'm sitting in one room with my attorney. She's sitting in another room with her attorney, and then there's another attorney going back and forth. And of course, as you know too well, the legal meter is running the whole time. But they came to us with their first offer, and you know, I was prepared that they were going to ask for more money than I make. I've been fortunate to do pretty well, but you know. My attorney's like, let's not pay any attention to that. But the real grenade, the third gift hit when the mediator said, oh, by the way, she wanted me to let you know you gave her herpes. And dropped the lab core test on the table, and being in the medical field, I knew what I was looking at. And it was a DNA test that was done. And sure as heck, she had, you know, herpes too. She had the sexually transmitted version of herpes. And it was at that point that, you know, once I got over the, quickly got over the anger and the betrayal piece, I'm like, ah, okay, all I got to do is test negative. Because in North Carolina, if there's proof of infidelity, there is no alimony. So, you know, I spent 2 days on pins and needles waiting for my test results to come back. And I fortunately tested negative. And I believe she only played that card because I think she was certain.
Oh, so you did test negative then?
I tested negative, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So then alimony wasn't an issue?
Well, I won't give the book away too much. But we ended up having to get an STD expert involved, and I ended up, going back to court with what they call a Rule 59 motion, cause I didn't like the initial order from the judge. So I was appealing the alimony ruling. I mean, she destroyed her phone. She wiped computers clean. She had a DNA test that tested positive for herpes. I had a negative test. But yet the system interpreted the way the system interprets it. So,
and she was the one that initiated the untying of the knot. She was the one that wanted the, you know, whole divorce thing to start when she started accusing you of cheating.
Yeah. And she could have, she's not right, obviously, mentally. But she could have just come and said, I'm not happy. You know, I'm not happy. I don't trust you, whatever. You're a piece of shit, whatever. But she didn't do that. She tried to destroy me and literally tried to kill me in the process.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack, man. That's like, that is serious. That, you know, that could have ended very badly for, you know, the kids could have not had a father, you know, by the end of all this, if it didn't work out properly. I mean, you need a lot of resilience. Like, this is probably the hardest thing you've ever been through, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And the other thing I want to make clear is I'm super happy now. But I saw it as a gift, even in the darkest of days when I'm dealing with all the legal stuff and a full-time job and just trying to keep my head screwed on and not having my daughter in my life at the time and wrestling with that emotional piece and having your integrity and your character attacked. But if she never played that card, Richard, I don't know where I'd be today. I would never have looked at 5 years of medical claims, 5 years of pharmacy claims. I would never have pieced together as much as I pieced together. And I might be living in a box somewhere, blaming myself. And I may not have my daughter in my life. And my son may have a different view of me. So I'm thankful every day that she, for whatever reason, played that card.
What was some of the most shocking stuff that like popped up? Because I mean, every guy that I've talked to that's gone through the divorce machine is always like, well, never saw that one coming. And it's not always the same thing for every guy. I'm just wondering what yours was.
Oh, there were several. I think the first one was certainly the infidelity, but that, believe it or not, that really didn't bother me. I'm like, eh, whatever. But now it started to bother me a little bit as I looked back at, 5 years of medical claims and discovered that she pretty much had every STD out there. She had prescriptions for antibiotics, 23 prescriptions.
Oh, she was getting scripts for everything that she could cure.
Yeah, 23 prescriptions for antibiotics in a 45-month period. So one every 2 months.
Holy smokes.
And again, I'm in the pharmaceutical industry, and many of these medications I had to look up and go, what's this? What's it? Oh, this is for vaginal burning and itching. Oh my God, she had 12 prescriptions for yeast infections. And I'm like, so that became laughable to me. I think the thing that shocked me the most that I discovered first was there were two prescriptions in her pharmacy claims. Again, going back 5 years. So I had massive amounts of pharmacy claims to look at that. I discovered those the day after she dropped the grenade on me about the herpes thing. Cause I'm like, well, shit, I should look at her pharmacy claims. If she's got herpes, she's got to be on something. And I found two pharmacy claims every month going back 5 years that were marked private. The rest of them, it would tell you what the medication was. It never tells you in the claim who wrote it. But I worked with our insurance company and finally got to the right person and said, look, I'm paying all the medical bills. I'm the primary card holder. I want to know what these prescriptions are, and I want to know who's writing them. That shocked me when I discovered the Adderall and the Adderall XR, because we spent, I don't know how much money, going to cardiologists because she was having significant cardiac issues. she had two or three stroke like, and I use stroke like in parentheses because it wasn't ultimately wasn't a stroke, but she had what they call a cerebral vascular event. She had two of them during our marriage, but yet never told anybody that, oh, by the way, I'm on two different strengths of amphetamines.
So that was a result of the meds that she was on, some of which was to deal with her anxiety and some of which was to deal with the STDs she kept getting.
Yeah. Yeah.
After 5 years, she was obviously cheating on you for a few years then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it might have been throughout our entire marriage. I don't know.
Did you just throw up your hands and just say, fuck it, I'm out?
I should have done that after I got out of the psychiatric facility. But again, I say I'm glad that I didn't because, I mean, the good Lord wanted me to hang off or something. But I'm glad that I didn't because the third gift may never have been revealed. The herpes may never have been revealed. I believe she contracted, well, my STD expert who wrote the CDC guidelines for treating STDs. We found this guy, I won't tell you where we found him, but he was close enough to where I live. Sidebar on this a little bit, because it's not in the book, to protect his identity a little bit. But when I meet with him to go over the results and to talk about things, he's like, yeah, my now ex-wife did this to me too. I said, what do you mean? He said, she was accusing me of having affairs and she was screwing a guy in Chicago and screwing a guy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And then he says, she's crazy. And I said, are you saying that diagnostically or are you just being flippant? And he said, no, she's got borderline personality disorder. And I'm like, oh my God, that's what they think my now ex-wife has.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you read it my chapter when you've got BPD, you tend to act out in such a way to ensure abandonment's going to happen. Right.
To
you out of it. I'm going to drop the link for you guys to hop on if you want to ask a question tonight. Young, old, man, woman, I don't care. Click the link. Just make sure you got a good connection and come ready with a question. I'm just going to scroll up here, grab a few of these super chats before I miss them. Rafi asked, hi, do you recommend Islam's idea of marriage? Well, you can go back and watch the video I did with Abu American. He's the American guy that lives in Germany. He's got two wives. He's Islamic. His marriage has had 12 wives. So he also has struggles with that as well. You know, you're always going to have struggles with Western women, in my view. You have any thoughts on Islam as an idea of marriage to solve, you know, or potentially avoid problems like this? I don't think it would do much difference.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the concept, the Islamic marriage concept. So is it a polygamy type thing?
Yeah, they can have multiple wives. It's kind of written into their rule book.
Yeah. I couldn't handle the one I had. So
yeah, that's the thing that a lot of guys don't get, you know, the idea of having multiple women in your life that are monogamous with you, but you don't need to be with them. It comes with an extra set of problems, right? I mean, you're going to have strong game in a marriage like that and some solid frame. Sheffley just dropped a super chat with no comment. Let me just see if I missed anything here. Same with Dave Steele. Thanks for the support. DB says, it's amazing he's still alive. His wife is the devil incarnate.
And without a doubt.
Let's kind of move into today. Do you want to talk about your current relationships with women?
Sure.
Woman.
Sure.
How's that going?
It's good. It's good. She's a wonderful woman. I've been blessed with the fact that she's been extremely patient and kind with me. She knows about the entire story. I didn't wait long to share that with her. I figured I'd just lay it all out for her. There are times, to be honest with you, Richard, that I haven't treated her real fairly and emotionally shut down and decided, I don't know that I want to continue to pursue this. I'm maybe better off on my own, but she's been extremely patient and kind and supported me moving away. So I moved away from North Carolina to South Carolina, moved away 4.5 hours. And we're, you know, currently attempting to do the long-term or the long distance relationship piece, but she's been extremely supportive and understanding.
Hard dating after you got divorced from basically a she double.
Yeah, I mean, I stayed away from it for three years. Well, I stayed away from it for well over 3 years because I had no desire. Plus, I was, you know, working full time and working on the book and was focused on getting my head back on squared on right. And but no, I was introduced to her from you know, an old neighbor. And ironically, my daughter also happened to helped me introduce me to her. And so far, so good. But like I said, I've been the one that's not been so nice to her at times, and just emotionally shutting down and having to work through things and, you know, work through where I think you talk about PTSD in your book, but I've had some moments of that, you know, in the last couple of years. And I think part of that is writing the book. Part of that is reopening a lot of the boxes that I had closed. But yeah, I'm extremely happy right now with where I'm at with my relationship.
I think Santiago pulled this message back because you just answered it, but it took you about 3 years to even consider dating again, eh?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Again, guys, if you want to hop on the stream and ask a question, the join link for StreamYard is in the chat. Just make sure you got a good Wi-Fi connection, have some kind of, you know, wired headphones, so we don't have any issues with feedback. Bring questions, young, old, male, female, doesn't matter. There's another one here. ZDM was talking about marriage. So you were relatively young when you got married. I think you said you were about 26.
Yeah, I was 28. I was 28 when I got married. Yeah.
Did you have much experience with women by then, or?
That's a great question. I had, prior to that, I had, I guess, only one serious relationship, if you will. And that was.
What was your expectation versus reality when it came to marriage?
I looking back at it on the time, I don't know that I really had one, right? You know, you feel like you're in love. You feel like you enjoy being with somebody, and you want to give them the best that you can give them. But I kind of went into it, you know, I kind of went into it blind, to be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm honest with everybody. And I was honest with my girlfriend about this, but, as I'm driving to the church at the age of 28, I'm thinking, I'm not so sure I want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, and the reason I did this, and I've had this conversation with not only my son, but any younger gentleman that have asked, I'm like, don't put an age limit on it. And maybe I got to that point where I say, well, you're 28, you've been dating her a couple of years, you're in love with her, you enjoy being with her, you know, why not? But I had a little pit in my stomach as I was driving to the church, and I often think about that. And my brother, who really stepped in and was my hero and saved my life, he was my best man. He's oftentimes said to me, man, we should have turned that car around. But I have no regrets. I've got two beautiful children out of it, and I've learned a ton from it. But my plan is definitely to give your book to as many young men as I can. And certainly my son's going to get a copy of it. But
yeah, I mean, like the whole thing with marriage that guys don't get when they march into that is it can be a slaughterhouse. You know, half of them end. And even the ones that stay together, there's a good chunk of the ones that stay together that aren't happily married. You know, they just stay together because they don't have any other options, or they're cowards, or, you know, whatever the lyrics are for them at the time. But yeah, marriage is game on hard mode. So don't think for a minute that it's just, hey, everything's sugar and spice and all things nice, and it should work out just fine. Yeah. Got a super chat from Santiago here. He says, thank you for sharing. Did her mom cheat on her dad before he came out?
I do not know. But I do know, again, my point of reference, I don't know that. My point of reference for who her mom was prior to me even, you know, knowing Aaron or even meeting Aaron was that once her father left, that her mother was quite the wild woman with guys in and out of the house. And she was an alcoholic. And again, this is my ex-wife's story. So,
well, you can't really, I mean, it doesn't sound like you can trust much of what she says, but there's going to be some truth there. If her mom had a revolving door at the front of the house for guys to come and go as they please. I mean, that's never the best example to set.
Yeah. That's the way she made it out to be.
It's gonna screw with her head. So that's definitely a red flag. I mean, you always got to look at the parents' relationship. You're gonna hear stories like, it turned out my dad was gay and he came out when I was two and he ran off. Okay, fine. Well, how did your mom handle that afterwards, right? Did she have a revolving door installed at the front of the house and guys came and went, and, you know, she had a drinking problem, or was she, you know, did she pair bond with one man, you know, sort of thing, or none at all and just properly raise you guys? Like, there's all kinds of questions that you got to consider out of that.
Yeah.
I got a guy here in the waiting area. So Chris, I'll bring you on in just one second. Let me just see if there was a follow-up to this. I genuinely feel unless you're trying to have children, marriage is just a device to transfer resources from a man to woman. With divorce rates, it doesn't look good. Well, okay, this is not a lie, but you know, if you take a look at the list of billionaires, the vast majority of women that have acquired their wealth, they acquired it through divorce. They didn't acquire it through inheritance. They didn't acquire it through running a business. It was acquired through divorce. Those are just facts. Let's grab Chris here. Welcome, dude.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. You have a question?
Awesome. Yeah, JD, I mean, thanks for sharing your story, man. Absolutely.
Not at all. Nice to talk to you.
Horrifying in a way, but also glad you're still here and good to see you healthy and things are going well.
Thank you.
You mentioned something. Yeah, of course. I mean, you mentioned something just now about, you know, having that kind of gut feeling where, like, yeah, I think we should turn around. I think maybe we shouldn't do this. You know, Rich, I've read your book twice at this point. I just got out of a long-term cohabitation relationship. I'm in my ex's and I's place right now as we speak, moving out in a month. But JD, can you talk a little bit about, you know, that kind of feeling and maybe if there were some of the red flags beforehand, before things got really crazy, maybe what brought that about? Just so, you know, I think one of the things I've learned recently is really trusting that gut feeling. Can you just talk a little bit about that and what that was like?
Yeah, I mean, and again, I mentioned it at the outset, Chris, was that my gut told me when I first met her, I didn't go seek her out. I didn't ask her for a number. I happened to run into her in a bar 3 months later, and then, of course, we struck things up. But as I'm driving to the church, and I've got that in my gut, thinking, I'm not sure I should be doing this. You know, part of that was driven by some of the shit she had given me, you know, about a week before we got married. So, cause I was going to go out with a couple of my brothers and, you know, celebrate, you know, no crazy bachelor party or anything. We just going to go out and have a few beers. And she rode me pretty hard about that. Even the day we got married, you know, to the point of, if you're still drunk, you know, this marriage doesn't count. And I'm like, I'm not still drunk. We didn't drink that much, but it was just those little things. And again, I think personally, I put an age limit on it and said, well, I'm 28 and not getting any younger. Maybe it's time to pull the trigger. And
I had that thought around 34.
Okay.
That's when I got married. Yeah. I'm not getting any younger. Seems like this is a good idea. Insert other, you know, reasons why.
Chris, I would add to that. And I've told my son and I've told anybody that will listen now is find somebody who's going to make you better. Right. So know your game, know your frame, know where you want to go and have your purpose and vision, but then also someone who's going to complement that and someone who's going to also support what you want to do and where you want to go, but push you too, you know, push you in a good way.
Did you have this feeling, JD, that, you know, she made you feel like, oh, this chick actually gets me?
No.
Not even that, eh?
No, uh-uh.
Because that's usually one of the first signs of somebody that's got borderline. I mean, covert narcissism is really interesting because I got a guy that I've, let's just say that the guy that is Steve from accounting that edited my book was going through a divorce with a covert narcissist. And some of the stories that I've heard through that, it's just like, wow. You really got to learn to tune into your intuition when it comes to women, guys. If like the red flags or something's popping off and the spidey senses start to tingle, you got like take a step back, take a breath, put it off for a bit, try to figure out what it is, or don't even do it. Like honestly, there's 4 billion women on the planet. There's 8 billion people in total. There's at least half of them are going to be women. There's going to be someone out there that's not going to make the spidey senses fire off.
Yeah, I don't reject.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, JD. I just was going to mention, after going through your book, Rich, I out of the 20, I could make a case for 11 of them for this past woman that I was with.
Yeah, so, that's not good.
Learned a little bit too late, but
I'll tell you guys this. I mean, if there's anything more than two or three, just keep her at arm's distance. I mean, if you want to spin her as a plate and leave her in rotation, fine, but do not get into anything on a long-term basis. I think Santiago is asking for the name of your book, JD. Can you just tell him what it is?
Yeah, it's called The Third Gift, and the subtitle is My Dance with the Devil and Her Mother.
Yeah, and I just dropped the link for you again there in the chat as well.
Thank you. Yeah, and Rich, I was going to ask you, is your buddy that's going through, I don't know how she hid it for 17 years, you know, because that's what people say. You couldn't have been that happily married for 17 years. And maybe it is, I just didn't know any different, right? So you had asked earlier about previous relationships, and I only had one prior to her. I enjoyed doing my own thing. I enjoyed hanging with the boys. I was building my career and doing my thing. And, so I didn't have too many serious relationships before her.
Got a question here in the chat. He's asking about notch count, you know, relationship notch count. Do you know how many guys she was with before you met her?
It all depends on whether or not she was honest with me, but I did pick up on that in your book as well, the old notch count piece. But I have no idea. I think her notch count went up when we got married, actually. So it's like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think when we had those discussions, it might have been a small number of, you know, 6 to 8. But, you know, again, I got to consider the source. I will say this, too. I forgot about this, but it is in the book. And again, it's a red flag. She got pregnant in high school. OK, so she got pregnant. She got pregnant prom night, and she had an abortion. She was up front with me about that. I'll never forget it. I don't know why I remember it, but. We're at a Pizza Hut, and she dropped it on me that, you know, I wanted to be open and honest, and I appreciated her being open and honest. And at the time, I might have dismissed it. Well, I did dismiss it because I'm like, I'm not going to be judgmental. You know, I could have been in that position as well. But I think that as I put all this together after the fact, I'm like, yeah, that's kind of speaks to the promiscuity. There's a line in the book where I talk about her mommy. I don't think I used mommy, but I say her mom has, you know, covered her tracks dating back to her prom days. So,
oh yeah. I mean, family will do that. I said, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Chris, you were talking about just kind of splitting up with your, living girlfriend, because you guys were cohabitating. There was a bunch of red flags. Why did you guys part ways?
So it had been a case. I mean, there were red flags and issues all throughout. I mean, there were multiple times before we moved in together March of 2020. So right before everything kind of went crazy. I mean, and we got a dog right then after. So, I mean, it was kind of one thing after the other, but I mean, there were multiple issues with emotional immaturity on her part, definite daddy issues. So her dad, she's the oldest of three, and her mom has now been married three times on her third marriage. Ooh. Her dad gave up his parental rights. I guess you could say legally disowned her when she was 13, and I think he was abusive to her mom. And I'm not sure if it was ever violent, but definitely physical. But I mean, emotional insecurity, definite daddy issues, workaholic, really, really focused on career and it was like you talk about, Rich, it was betaization by 1,000 concessions, right? It was, listen, SSRIs were an issue, low sex drive, pretty much everything you can possibly imagine. And so it became, okay, like she's unhappy because she's on the wrong medication. Okay, great. We'll get her on the right medication. And that didn't fix it. Then it was, all right, you know, she's having falling outs with her friends and we need to get her out of that situation and we'll move in together and that'll fix it. But the apartment she wanted was out of my price range, but I did it because I wanted to make her happy. And then, you know, we decorated the place how she wanted, even though, like, I hate the shit that she put up because I wanted to make her happy, right? And then it was, hey, we're going to wait until August to get a dog because, look, 6 months minimum. Okay, fine. We'll get them in March because it made her happy. So it was that. And then it was working together, being on top of each other 24/7 in a small – I'm in New York, by the way, so small 500-foot, you know, 500 square foot apartment. Yeah. And I'm going to open it anyway. Right.
Guys that can't read it. It's a picture of a cardboard box that's filled with red flags and it's marked red flags. It says, even though the box is clearly labeled and I can see what's in it, I'm still going to date it for 6 months.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Ours was right about 2.5 years. And the crazy part of it all was, I got to a point where, I mean, I could keep listing the attention on Instagram. I mean, she's traveling and hanging out with a bunch of different girlfriends and doing the selfie thing and the face tune and all that. And obviously JD just shaking his head. I know. Yeah. And I know that now. And I didn't at the time. And so
that's like the vast majority of modern women today that, you know, that you're going to come across. And those are the ones that you got to keep at arm's length. Just say, all right, look, you know, I mean,
Chris, did you end it or did she?
Yeah, I was going to get to that. So the worst part was it happened right after, I guess it was the day after Thanksgiving. We were in actually North Carolina, JD, so Hilton Head area, or that's South Carolina, rather. That's She's from a part of North Carolina, but we were in, her family moved down there. So we were down there for the holiday, and we had had a big sort of argument the week before, but we were just trying to get through the holiday, and we'll talk about it when we get back to New York, and things just kind of blew up. And I said, hey, here are all my issues with the relationship. These are things that I've been plaguing for a long time. And we had had fights and spats, but our routine with any argument or disagreement was I'd sit her down and say, hey, I'm going to logically sort out. This is how I feel about this. This is what I think needs to change. And then for her, it's the waterworks and it's the personal this. And then I comfort her.
It doesn't work. They're not going to let, you know, something right. like logic and reason get in the way of her emotions.
Her emotions. Right. And so then it's the crying and then it's the panic attacks. And then it's, you know, I can't do anything right. And then I comfort her and then we go to bed and nothing gets solved. Right. So we had this kind of conversation and I said, look, I'm still willing to work on this. Even after all of this stuff, I think the number one thing is we've got to move out. You know, we can't be living together, but we can kind of still maybe keep this alive. And she just said, yeah, I don't think that it's worth it. And I don't think it's worth doing. And you know, even though I'm the one that sort of initiated and brought on the conversation, I still feel like I was the one that got dumped, broken up with in a way. So, yeah, it's been a tough couple of months.
What's that doing today?
You know, she moved out unofficially around Christmas time. So she was up here. I was down in Virginia with family. And she basically said, like, you know, I was trying to, I did all of those, you know, get your ex back in 5 steps or buy this program and say these 3 texts, stuff you talk about all the time, right, Rich? Mm-hmm. Like, and up until recently, there was one that it was like, okay, well, you need to tell her that she's actually moving to DC. She took a different job. So she's out, like she's gone. And so I'm listening to these guys say, okay, well, you know, you need to get her defenses down and say you're cool with whatever happens and being friends, even though that's not how you really feel. So that way you can text and call and build a train. And I was actually going through an old before the train wreck, one where you guys talk about long distance with Rolo and some of those folks. And they're like, it's just not a relationship, dude. Like, what are you doing? And so it wasn't until probably within the last 24 or 48 hours where I finally kind of snapped and said, look, dude, it's not, and I've been going on dates. I'm spinning plates. You know, I'm in the gym, you know, I'm down 24 pounds since August and I've got probably another 15 to go. You know, I'm into powerlifting. I've got a competition coming up in a week or two. Really my focus right now is really trying to build my tribe and trying to find my purpose. Like you talk about, you know, I've read your book twice. I've read the rational, I mean, Mode 1, Rational Male, you know, The Way of Men, your whole book list essentially. And I'm just, you know, both of Dr. Robert Glover's books, No More Mr. Nice Guy. And then Dating Essentials. So I'm really just, you know, I'm trying to soak it all in and be a sponge as quick as possible, but also go through it a couple of times.
You know, you're doing what a lot of guys will do when they come out the other end and become better is they do the work on themselves. So you're going in the right direction, whatever you're doing, keep on doing it. I got a few supers I got to catch up on here, and I got Samuel in the background that wants to chime in as well. Did you have something else you wanted to add, JD?
Yeah, I was going to say, Chris, don't kick yourself for wanting to, you know, reconnect with the ex or whatever. I, as crazy as it may sound, as we headed towards our first mediation, I'm sitting in the parking lot. She's in one car. I'm in another car. My dumb ass was still in love with her. So that's the other reason why the gift is such a gift, because the man above finally said, no, son, your marriage is over. Time for you to move on. So,
all right. Yeah. Thanks for hopping on, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Let's see what we got here. I got a few supers I got to catch up on, and then I'll get to you, Sam. Just give me a second. Ross says, thanks for sharing your story. I was unable to avoid a train wreck with help of Rich. Sorry, I was able to avoid a train wreck with the help of Rich. 31 broke it off and have 50-50 custody, no child support. You're welcome, brother. Always pleased to hear somebody come out the other side better off. Doing the Lord's work, those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it. This is correct. There's always a silver lining in all these shit shakes. I start calling them shit shakes now, because you take all these ingredients, right? You take the trying to get poison, the cheating, the drug addiction, her mom, the STDs, and you put it in a blender and you turn it on. You pour it in your glass and you've got a nice little shit shake there. And that's what happens sometimes with us guys. You know, we love drinking sometimes you need to drink the shit shake to realize that you've just taken a shit shake down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Eye-opening video, younger men need to pay attention, 100%. Yeah. Sam, I'm going to pull you in here, see what you got for us. How you doing?
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. You have a question for us?
Yes. So, Mr. McCabe, I kind of changed my question. Now, having been through the whole process, what do you wish you kind of knew now? Or is there anything that was unresolved after your separation?
Can you be more specific?
Like, is there anything that you personally ponder on, or is it something that you've completely just moved past since it's all over now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I moved past the majority of it. I'm a guy that's wired to want to understand why and to have a deep understanding of having answers to everything. So I had to become satisfied with the fact that I had 90% of the answers to what had happened. The one that still lingers on occasion is, who were they and how many, you know? and again, she destroyed her phone. So we will never know, but that's the only, cause there's a lot of twists and turns in the book too. So we thought we had identified who the guy was. And this was when my sister-in-law had, you know, after I moved out of the house, my sister-in-law said, I think she's been poisoning you. She's a nurse, so she would know. But it wasn't until that we thought we discovered who she was running around with. He had a PhD in organic chemistry that then I got concerned. That's when I said, oh boy, he might have the wherewithal. And that's when I went and got initially, I got blood tested, and a blood test is not a good test for, acute exposure or chronic exposure to arsenic or heavy metals. So it turns out that I had some pretty shoddy private investigator work, former FBI, as they kept telling me, former FBI, they're the best they are. But turns out the phone number they thought was attached to a guy was actually attached to our financial advisor's wife, a former neighbor. So I believe that she was running around the neighborhood with perhaps my financial advisor's wife and just hooking up with dudes. Because after I left the neighborhood, I found out that it was quite like Peyton's place, that there was a lot going on. And I wasn't the first one whose wife was out, you know, running around on others. So that's the only, it doesn't bother me anymore, but it's the only thing that kind of lingers, Sam, is who were they? Where was she connecting with them? Because the other thing that she did was she was very stealthy about it all. But she started volunteering for a terminally ill cancer, pretty prestigious institution. So there were many nights that she would be gone all night. She would come to me at 8:30 at night and say, they've got somebody actively dying and nobody wants to cover it. Do you mind if I go? And of course, me being sympathetic and compassionate, I thought she was dealing with this to make up for her, the loss of her father. But I'm like, sure, go. But there were many nights she'd be gone from 8:30 at night till 7 o'clock in the morning.
I can tell you who it was, JD. It was either Kevin from sales or Steve from accounting. It was somebody that she was working with. It was somebody that she was working with, or that she came across, or she crossed paths with during the day-to-day business that she would conduct, whether she was doing some volunteer work or at the yoga studio. It's always a guy that, you know, she's tripping over, and it's not always just one. So you don't have to sweat it. It's like, who cares? You know, it doesn't matter if it was one or if it was three or if it was 13, you know, she's a guard tool. Just, you know, let it go.
So
yeah, we've absolutely moved on.
I'm glad to hear it. And I hope you and, you know, your two children, that they're, your relationship has mended afterwards. Cause my goodness. But
yeah, it's fantastic. It's never been better. So thank you.
Yeah. My last question is just after been through that, and you've mentioned that you're currently in another relationship just after the whole process. What is your view on marriage and right now, just after?
Would you ever get married again, Judy?
Yeah.
You never say never, but right now, I would say I don't have a desire to get married. No.
There you have it.
Yeah. I'm enjoying her companionship. I'm enjoying the adult conversation. I'm enjoying everything that I didn't have in my marriage. But at this point, yeah, we're not talking about marriage or looking at getting married or what have you.
Yeah, there's no benefit to marriage after you've got your kids out of the way. I mean, you know, you can date, you can cohabitate if you want, but there's no point inviting the state in your home to, mingle things up. Got a super here from my old friend, Rich Cooper's used TRT needle. It's always funny when he pops into the chat. This is just handing my tuition money, Dad. Keep it up. Thanks for the support, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rich. And definitely enjoyed your book. And yeah, basically in my young years, marriage just seems to be more and more farther away from my priorities.
You got lots of time, guys. You can wait till you're 35, 34. You got lots of runway.
You were though, right? And don't you have two ladies chasing you right now? Is that the same Sam?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. And I think Rich and John had suggested maybe a three-way, and you kind of dismissed that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I've had to more or less move on from the two of them.
Okay, good.
So no biggie.
You'll be all right. Thanks, man. You've watched a few of the episodes, I see.
I did. I watched you last Monday. It was great. Yeah.
I got a couple of comments here. Let me just kind of sort through them. There's some feedback here from a woman, Aquarius girl. She says, JD, the number of men your ex slept with is not a reflection of the man you are, but a reflection of the kind of woman she is. Lack of character, more like it.
Thank you for that. Excellent.
Promiscuous housewives and the risque Tinder open sexual marketplace lifestyles of the new modern higher SMB women. The world's a change in a place. We got Lebowski in the waiting area. Let's pull the big Lebowski in. Hey, JD, who hurt you? Why no more marriages? That's a sarcastic super chat. He's just playing.
I got you.
Lebowski, what's up, bro?
I just saw you were on, so I jumped in. I see it's about marriage, so I
did you catch the whole story?
I have not, unfortunately. I was working on some projects, and I recently accepted a job today at the sixth biggest company in the world, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Congratulations. But anyway,
back to marriage. I grew up very Christian, you know. I had a good representation of sort of marriage in a very strange way. So my parents' awful divorce, when he passed away, it was kind of like revealing. A lot of stuff came about when he had passed away. And I was like, holy crap. I didn't know that was real. I was like, that's why my childhood is so weird, because it's just when someone dies, a lot of things come to the surface. Mm-hmm. So that relationship was bad, but my mom found someone else, and it's all the things that are said about step families, stepfathers, this guy, he, if it wasn't for him, I would probably be dealing drugs, being in some sort of gang, doing something that is, I'd probably be in jail or prison if it wasn't for the man that my mom married. He really drew out the entrepreneurial passions that I had, and it's been quite the experience, but I've seen it not work, and then I've seen it work in the step family, which is quite strange. And in my particular circumstances is I currently have a girlfriend, and I keep finding, especially because of my physical physique, that like in order for me to snap any woman up, it would be very easy to. That's just how I feel, the interactions I have. And my girlfriend knows it, and she, at every single whim, at anything I want, it's mine. Anything, at drop of a dime. There's no arguments, and if she does try and like shit test me, it's just I say one thing, and it's pretty much cut.
How old are you right now? again? You're
24.
24. So let me tell you a little story. So in my early 20s, girls would buy me new tires for my motorcycle. They would bring meat over for barbecues. They would, you know, blah, 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 right? That's mm-hmm. that's easy to do when you're a young, handsome, like Chad-looking guy when you're 24. But when you get older, you've got to have more to show for yourself if you still want to be treated that way by women, if you want them to enter your frame and respect and value, right? So you've got to build up your value. You know, it's I think that Rollo talks about it in his second book, you know, building value, right? Mm-hmm. You got some runway ahead of you. So don't get too comfortable with like women pining for you and bending over backwards and doing all this shit, because it will end if you don't level up.
Yeah. Here's my sort of question for you. Something I kind of been battling with is while I was dating my girlfriend, I broke up with her for like one day, and she was very lazy. She was literally playing the Sims video game. And it was right when the pandemic happened, like last year. And I was like, no, I don't like you playing video games. I want you to do something good for yourself. So I'm going to break up with you so you can focus on yourself and do something right for you. And she's like, no, please, please. And I was like, nope, bye. And then right when that happened, I found another girl that I was somewhat interested in, went on a date with her. And she was pretty much like the business type, very, you know, driven to be successful in business. And she works for a big company now. But when that was happening, I kept thinking, okay, you want to be very successful, but then I don't know if it's just me, but when a particular girl is just trying to be so successful, her attractiveness was definitely less so.
It goes down is what you're saying.
Yeah, it went down for me, because I knew her from a long time ago. She was like, wow, she was smoking. But for some reason, her drive was like a turnoff.
How old is she?
My age, yeah.
I think guys, generally speaking, aren't turned on by women that have, you know, pieces of paper framed on mahogany on their wall with little letters after their name. You know, it's interesting, and it's nice, you know, that she can stand on her own two feet. But at the mm-hmm. end of the day, the thing that turns on guys is boobs and butt.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tits and hips. We don't really care about their degrees and what they do for a living. I mean, it's nice that they can stand on their own two feet.
No, it's the thing that she had that, like the boobs and the butt.
She had it all is what you're
she
saying.
She had that. Yeah. But the fact that she was so focused on working within this Fortune 500 company and just how much that drove her, that was a big detractor for me.
Well, she's a feminist, right? Like any woman that puts that much effort into their career at mm-hmm. that age is not looking to you know, have babies, you know, I mean, she's at the peak of her ability to have children, you know, at that age. That's you know, historically what women, I mean, they'd be doing it at the age of 15, you know, 10,000 years ago, but now it's go get the degree, you know, climb the corporate ladder. And I mean, if she doesn't figure it out, if that's something that she wants, she's going to be 39 with a carton full of dry eggs or no eggs, you know, looking for some guy to quickly wife her up.
You hit the nail on the head. I was walking with her, hiking. That's what the date was. And I just wanted to hear her talk. And she was talking about her political views. And it's right along. Like, you hit the nail on the head. It's I was like trying to correct her. And she was, there's a lot of
tension there. That's your intuition saying to you, hey, Big Lebowski, pay attention to this. This is something that you need to be aware of, because this is the kind of person that she is. So you either have to be okay with it, or you can bounce and you can take back the Sims playing video game girl.
Yeah, and then right after that, I said, okay, that's a problem. And then for the girlfriend that I dumped, and because she was playing the Sims, the very next day she signed up to be a personal trainer. She says, look, I have this certificate. I signed up for this class. Will you date me now? And I was like, well, you're hotter than the other girl, so sure. So I took her back after 24 hours. So
You're too young for a long-term monogamous relationship. I think I told you that last time, didn't I?
You sure did.
Why do you keep fighting that advice?
Well, a big part of it is not ruining something that serves me. I don't. That's what I would picture it. I feel like
I would, I would rather you come on here and say, hey, Rich, man, I got a question about this business idea that I have. I've been, you know, working in this corporation for a while, and I'd like to, you know, churn out something and make some bucks deluxe and blah, blah, blah. But at 24, what do I always tell you guys? Chase excellence, not women.
Mm-hmm.
24, chase excellence, not women. You know, let her play Sims. Let her climb the corporate ladder. Do your thing. And let the cream rise to the top. Spin the plates, let the cream rise to the top, and you decide when you get older what it is that you want to do, if you want to have kids, who it is you're going to choose to have kids with, because you've known them for a long time and you've started to understand women. Like at this point right now, you're talking about this climb the corporate ladder chick, mm-hmm. who's go, 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 rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
And you didn't realize until I told you that she's a feminist.
Yeah, when I was talking to her, I was kind of trying to tilt her a different way, but yeah,
Dude, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, like any guy with a daughter would tell his kid to go and make sure that she can take care of herself, right?
Yeah, it's just absolutely.
It's just you have to understand that the driving nature behind that is put off your career, climb the corporate ladder, get the good job, compete with everybody else. You know, get the nice German car, buy the house, and then by the time she's 37, 38, where she's like, oh shit, I've got like a year or two to have kids if I'm lucky.
Shoot.
You know, that's where the bad news starts to happen.
Here's something that's very important to me. I don't know if you have an answer to this, but I was talking with my girlfriend, of course, and I was like, I don't think I would want to have kids until mid to late 30s. Some reason we're talking about kids. And she was like, mid to late 30s. I'll be great by then.
You can wait till you're mid to late 30s. She can't.
Yeah. She was like freaking out.
Well, that's okay. Right. Yeah. And she should be freaking out because she's tuned into her biological clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like she should be having kids in her 20s. I mean, that's why I tell guys to date younger, right? Like, you know, you should be dating like 7 to 11 years younger, generally speaking. I mean, you can go younger if you want, you know, even beyond that. But that's usually like the sweet spot for it. So legitimately, when you're 35, you could be dating a chick that's 24, 25. No trouble at all. You want to, you know, she wants to settle down and pop out kids then, do it, right? If that's what you want to do.
Now, Rich, when you say chase excellence, okay, what if, like in terms of, if you're looking at charts, you're looking at scales, at my age range, I am in the 1% in terms of wealth and finances. Is that enough to say, at my age, I am 1%. I have reached success, but I mean, I'm continually trying to improve. So, because those numbers drastically increase after 24.
Well, for a 24-year-old, and I'm assuming that you live in a large coastal city or somewhere close to one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You probably, I mean, if you're making 150 grand plus, 200,000 plus, you're definitely in the top 1%. Like, I know guys that are 20 years old that make $400,000 a year, but they run their own company,
mm-hmm.
right? So. Right. Are you in the 1%? Are you in the top 10%? Are you in the top 5%?
1% for my age.
Okay. So you're spoiled for choice. What's your next move?
My next move? Well, I just got this amazing job with a really, really excited about that leadership role. And I'm on the side. I am coding a website. I've talked a long time ago about this when I first appeared here. And I'm still doing that. It's long. I'm learning how to code Java, but it's happening in the background.
Okay. So keep doing all those things. Don't let these women distract you. Don't, I take this one, I take that one, my girlfriend, my extra girlfriends, whatever. Just, you know, keep working on that. Make that the focus. And by the way, it's not your responsibility to babysit the Sims video game player. If she wants to do mindless shit with her life, let her do that, because you're going to mm-hmm. find that's going to become exhausting if you get into a long-term relationship or you marry a chick like that, because you're constantly going to have to be managing what it is that she's doing all the time.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Well, women can really complicate your life if you bring them in too early or you bring in the wrong one. I mean, you know, JD's got he wrote a book on how it complicated his life. And he didn't see it coming. Aside from driving to the church on his wedding day and his spidey senses were kind of tingling, he didn't see it coming.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, right?
You know, hindsight's always 20/20. So, you know, you can't live long enough to make all these mistakes yourself. So pay attention to a lot of these stories in the Before the Train Wreck series. You know, you've got the book, go through it, you know, when you need to. But the point is right now at 24, the Big Lebowski needs to spend time, you know, developing himself and laying the entire groundwork for the rest of his life. Because maybe this working for the sixth, you know, biggest company in the world turns you into, I don't know, maybe you become the CEO of that company in 20 years' time. Maybe you go and start up your own business that competes with it. Maybe you see some opportunity in the line of work that you're in that will give you a chance to become an entrepreneur and go out on your own to solve problems for that industry. There's any number of things that can happen, but managing video game girl and how much time she spends playing Sims or whether or not she's going to personally train somebody, that's not the best use of your time.
Yeah, no kidding. That's why I broke up with her, and then she got her act together in one day.
So, well, again, I mean, you really shouldn't have managing a that, girlfriend at 24.
Yeah. Whew. You know, you got the feels and you got the tingles. And you're just like,
I'm not saying dump her. I'm not saying spend more time with her. I'm just saying, generally speaking, a girlfriend at 24 is not a good idea. Make sure you're in control of the birth, right? Okay. Let's not be, you know, raw dogging, bust the nut around here, because you don't want to have 9 months later, hey, by the way, Lebowski, we got a little Lebowski coming. And you're like, oh, I'm stuck with the video game girl.
That's where my head is. Yeah. That will ruin me. That's what I feel like.
All right. Let's wrap it up, because I got Dave in the waiting area. I hope that helped. Is that good? Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
See you.
All right, Dave, I'm going to pull you in real quick before we wrap up. This is one of my generals. What's up, brother?
It's another day. JD, when you were writing your book, were there any kind of reflections that you went back and kind of like rediscovered something or caught details that you missed going through the original process? I mean, like,
you mean going through the journey through hell? Was there something I missed as I went back and read the book or wrote the book?
Wrote the book, yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing really, David. There's really nothing that jumps out at me. But as I said earlier, that when I wrote the book, I had to open up all the boxes that I had tucked away. The human mind is incredible. If you don't waste it, you have the ability to compartmentalize a lot of trauma, a lot of adversity. But I don't think there was anything I missed, because after she made that revelation to me, I mean, I dug and I dug and I dug into everything to uncover as much of the deception as I could possibly uncover. But I don't think there was anything that was a new revelation to me as I wrote it. Other than the fact that I'm not sure how the hell I'm still here today, but besides that,
well, you're definitely a survivor. I'd never make it through that journey.
I'd give yourself a little more credit than that, perhaps. Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of good people walk with me, and so I mean, it was a nightmare.
So when you were losing the weight and you were doing your exercise routines, and what tipped you off to being poisoned with the protein powder? I mean, how did you determine it was arsenic? Did you do a chemical analysis, or did you?
Yeah. So it's a great question. So it all started in 2014. I was manipulated out of the house in 2015. So once we separated, kind of my health issues, I kind of put those to the wayside. Ultimately, after seeing an oncologist and several other specialists, I said, you know, I've got to deal with the legal stuff. Plus, I've got a full-time job. Finally, I was able to get in to see a liver specialist. And the liver specialist asked, ironically, he's like, look, any chance of any type of sex outside of the marriage? And I said, well, you know, let me tell you what happened. And I laid it out for him. And once again, I was tested for Hep C, Hep B, HIV all over again. Mm-hmm. And I did say, oh, by the way, I believe she was poisoning me, but I took a blood test. He says, well, blood test is not going to pick up chronic exposure. So he did a hair and nail test.
Okay.
It was a hair and nail test that picked it up. I've made the leap that it was in my protein powder. She didn't do a whole lot of cooking in the marriage. I started thinking back on that, you know, stuff which she cooked. But the only thing consistently that I took after I worked out 3 days a week was the protein. And again, as I told Rich,
like, does arsenic have a flavor or anything, or is it odorless, tasteless?
Yeah.
Odorless, tasteless. Mm. And the symptoms were this, the symptoms I was experiencing was, you know, in line with, you know, a chronic exposure to arsenic. So especially the intestinal stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. That's, you're definitely a survivor.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, Dave. Thanks.
Not a problem.
All right. Let's wrap it up on that note. We've done a good 90 minutes. I got somebody in the waiting area, but I don't want to keep pulling callers in when I try to, you know, have a hard stop on this. So, JD, I want to thank you for, hopping on, emailing me, sharing the story. Again, if you guys want to grab his book, I'll copy and paste it. And I'll also put it in the description if you guys are watching a replay, or you can just Google it. It's called The Third Gift, Dance with the Devil, was it?
My Dance with the Devil. And her mother. Yeah.
My Dance with the Devil and Her Mother by JD McCabe. So you can find that on Amazon if you want to, you know, get the full story and hear everything else there. Did you want to share any other resource before you go where people can find you aside from the book?
Sure. That'd be great. Yeah. So they can find me at, you know, if they've got any questions or want to connect, I'm at the third gift book at gmail.com. I'm on Instagram and Facebook at the third gift. Also on TikTok, my social media lady has me on TikTok now. So a lot of the videos that we have from a lot of the podcasts and things that we've done, she's putting out on TikTok. So,
got it. What's the long-term play? Like, what's the story behind the book? Like, what are you trying to accomplish with all this?
That's another excellent question. So I'm really going to look to use it to give back to others. So I've made a commitment to a couple of, organizations for former military that are struggling from PTSD and substance abuse. And I'm working with another philanthropic organization called the Mercy Center for Women. So I'm looking to turn it into a philanthropic venture. You know, once I break even, I've financed this all myself. I'm marketing it pretty much myself. I'm a one man company. So an opportunity to be on a show like yours, Rich, is something that I'm extremely grateful for, but I'm looking to give back and do some good with it. Because I had a lot of wonderful people step up and help me and help my kids as we went through this for the last 5 years. So,
sounds good. All right. So if you guys want to reach out to them, you know where to find them. Thanks for watching. Leave a comment below. Smash the like button. Just hang tight for a sec, JD. I'm just going to pull you out and go full screen just so I can just quickly shout out to the channel sponsor over my shoulder here. Grondike Soap, Tactical Soap. They've got the pheromone infused bars, beard oils, all the soaps. It's handmade, high quality stuff. Check it out. It's pinned in the top comment. Actually, it's not pinned yet. I have to pin it still, but I'll just put that there. You can go to coopersoap.com. The coupon code's already applied with that link, but grab some of that. Helps out support the channel. JD, you back there. So again, thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Don't go anywhere yet, JD. I'll talk to you after we come off the air.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Thank you, folks.